Brass Tacks, good morning.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
I'm all right, sir. You?
Okay, fine. I like to look at a bit of cricket here. Yes, and whole sock or issue or whatever you want to call it. I find it with the removal of Jason as the West Indies captain, I feel like that something more than what transparency feel actually influenced our decision. To my mind, that's my observation. Because I think the board had said to the players, anyone who dropped out of the tour to Bangladesh will not be victimized. Now, when you look at it, Jason was the test captain. Pollard is the white ball captain. Pollard still get to continue his play. To get to continue his play, but not Jason. When you look at it overall, but I said that it seemed to be something more than on the field of play. 16 test, former test players, captains rather. Jason had done better than most. Okay? Certainly from Lara time back down. Jason had done better than all of the other test captains since Lara, including Lara. Right? So I'm saying when you look there, 15 that did that captain for more than 10 tests, and he stayed at the number 7 spot. In other words, there were only 6 others that did better than him as a test captain. Okay? And that 6 was like, well, really players in the test captain in the past. Like the first, the number 1 spot is to Frank Worrell, Richards, Clive Lloyd, Richardson, Jerry Alexander, John Goddard. John Goddard is at number 6, Hole at 7, all the others behind Hole. So I don't understand what rationale they had to remove Jason as a test captain. Certainly not on his captain's in the performance. Now, if you look at it, actually, you remember the move when the new board came into, the West Indies Cricket Board came into effect. They removed the selectors. The hierarchy of the management team, the selectors, the coaches and things like that. To my mind, with Jason removal, that's a full circle now. To me, that's a full circle. Because I'm not knocking anyone. But when you look at it, even the last two tours the West Indies went on, that was the British tour and the New Zealand tour. Craig Braffett play was under scrutiny. They were talking about dropping Craig Braffett. And up to that point, Craig Braffett had Ben Holler. I can remember the last time Ben Holder get suspended because of slow overweight when he had won against the same Bangladesh during the Caribbean. He came in the last test, and at that point, Craig Braffett replaced Holder on 4 occasions, and he lost all 4 test matches.
So one of the interesting things about West Indies cricket is that I don't believe that. Just my personal belief, like you, I might have my odd beliefs. I don't believe the success of the captain has anything to do with their retention as captain. I have often wondered why certain captains remained while certain people were treated the way they were treated, why some people were called stars, others were not, and some of the changes made. I remember Ridley Jacobs, the wicketkeeper from the Leewards.
Leewards, right.
Yeah. I thought he was a competent keeper. I thought he did a good job. You had Darren Sammy of St. Lucia, who, again, I thought, you know, was an inspiration for his team and held it together. There were things said about him. I thought elevating Chanderpaul to the captaincy was wrong because while he was the type of sturdy batsman he was. I didn't think he would have held the team together, because not because of anything that was wrong with him,
right,
but because of the competition, the composition of the team.
Right.
When you look at the West Indies, you talk about the successful captains, Worrell, Clyde Lloyd, Viv Richards. These guys,
Richie,
I think from Richie's time, it started to,
but it started to drop.
Yeah, but what I found were the three names that I mentioned, Richards, Lloyd, Sir Frank, or even Sir Gary. These guys had a team of people who pulled around them. They saw themselves as being part of the unit. They worked as a team. I think under Clive Lloyd, it was perhaps the most noticeable.
Yes.
After that, After that, you had this pressure from the board, this person pulling here, insularity there, you know, people walking off the field. There were situations where, you know, you ask yourself, why is this, what's happening here? And, you know, this, I don't know, from then to me, the captaincy became a who you like and who you don't like, and who the board like and who the board don't like, and there became things that I thought went, to borrow Sierra Lyle Jamestown, went beyond the boundary. It was somewhere else other than on the field, because I couldn't figure out some of the decisions. However, when you look at the success of the younger members of the team, I think the challenge should have been, how do you keep a young unit molded together and functioning while still trying to perhaps not ditch all your seasoned players, and how to blend them without causing conflict? Because I have noticed, again, it's just my observation, I outside, so I may be wrong. When some of the so-called stars, the strong men, the men who the crowds go to see, when they're brought back into the fold, something happens with the camaraderie and the holding together of the team, especially if the stars see themselves as being larger than life, than the person who's appointed captain. It takes a lot to hold a team of people who really ain't like you together. Yeah? That may be the reason some of them are not successful.
Apart from
the fact that their tactics may be wrong on the field, or people don't respond to them the same way on the field, some of the things happening off the field cause for concern.
You see, even in Jason's case, I remember he stood up for the players. I think that's in England.
Mm-hmm.
He stood up for the players. He stood up for the players, I think, Gordon Pay or something like this.
Mm.
He stood up for the players. And even when they got in the way of the selectors and the coaches and things, when they beaten England down here 2-1 in the test series,
mm-hmm.
he also spoke out against that it should have not gotten rid of all the is the management the team.
Mm-hmm. You know, the management of the team, the coaching staff, they have to give the captain the kind of support he needs to mold the team and hold them together.
Yes.
If they don't show a level of confidence and support for the captain, men can do what they want to do. They can go on the end of the boundary and have conversations. They can call their broker on their cell phone to find out if their investment's working, as somebody did on one occasion, or leave to go because they have a pressing matter to handle, and you know what the pressing matter is, and all that kind of thing. So happens in West Indies cricket far more often, it seems, than in other places.
Only about here, ain't it?
But let's go back a bit. And since you're talking history, let's go back a bit, right? Remember when Gordon Greenidge, one of the most outstanding members of the opening batsman pair of Greenidge and Haynes, when he came into the team, he had all sorts of horrors because he was from England. Remember that? He had trouble settling into the team. And to me, Gordon was a gentleman.
Excellent.
A gentleman.
He
and Haynes were perhaps the most productive opening team we've had in eons.
Right.
stood out in the world.
He said in his book that he regretted he didn't go on to play to England.
Correct. And this is a man whose daughter died while he was playing cricket.
Born in Barbados, you know. But you remember that, as I said, I think I can remember as well when Clive Lloyd led a
rebel team?
You could call it that. And when they played in the Pakistan series,
yeah.
A certain player, he did not go.
Yeah.
He was a senior player in the West Indies side too.
Mm-hmm.
So he was hoping to say that he would feel he become the captain.
Yeah.
And when Clive Lloyd came back to the Caribbean, he took over the captaincy. So I don't understand. That's part of similar. I don't understand what happened with the Jesuit holder issue. If I had Jesuit knowing they offered me back now again, I will not even look at them in that. Concentrate on you. Concentrate on his cricket ability.
Mm-hmm.
I'll move on from there, man. Move on from there.
Yep. Brastax, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes.
Brastax?
It is.
Good morning. I found that the last contribution and the moderator embarked on a wide-ranging discussion about cricket. Briefly, I will mention one thing about cricket, that the West Indies team had been accused of not knowing anything about. When Shea Hope started to perform, Shea Hope's contribution was that he developed match awareness. Now, prior to that, a lot of critics were saying that one of the weaknesses of the West Indies team was that they did not have match awareness. It gladdened my heart when Shea Hope said he developed match awareness. And this is one aspect of West Indies cricket that contemporary cricketers should follow. But I'm not calling about cricket because I'm a failed cricketer. In other words,
well, I can't say I feel. I can only say I'm a radio listener cricketer. I know how to hold a bat, I know how to hold the ball, but don't ask me to do more than that.
But you know, Dennis, everybody says that I'm a failed cricketer. I'm in good company because people like Paul Backus and others.
Oh yeah, there was a guy. I remember asking Sir Clive Lloyd one day on the airport when I ran into him and somebody introduced him. He was going off on a tour and I said to him, I want you to explain Leonard Bacon to me. What did he do on the team? and I can't tell you the answer, Sir Clyde.
But
because there's some people over the years, you've asked yourself, you know, what they were doing on this team? But anyway, so I asked him about Bacon and he gave me an answer and I laughed.
But in regional cricket, Bacon would come
and make a lot of runs.
Broad bat.
Correct.
And make a lot of runs.
And stand up there for the whole day and a half, too.
Bat for the whole day and a half, that's true. But I'm not calling about cricket. A couple of weeks ago, I sought to make a contribution on aspects of education, but my phone wasn't working well and the moderator's phone wasn't working well.
Yeah, I want to Zoom talk, at the time with him, yeah.
I want to talk briefly on the impact that socioeconomic forces make on education.
Okay.
Now, we know that empirical observation shows that a lot of well-to-do people with middle income seem to be able to motivate their children and to provide stimulus to their children so much so that above common entrance level and CXC, the children do well. Of course, there are exceptions, though, where some relatively poor people are able to set an example and drive home the fact that fear of failure is a motivator.
Correct.
Yeah.
A big one, too.
Pardon me?
A big one, too.
Yeah, fear of failure. And a lot of very poor people do not want their children to fail. And the children internalize that as a kind of peculiar motivator to go on. Mm-hmm. And then there's peer group pressure. There are children who go to schools and link up with friends who are doing well. Mm-hmm. And these friends who are doing well provide an example to people who would normally be disadvantaged, and they tend all to grow up together. When I used to teach, there was a form called 3-5. I'm not going to call names. Now, if a form is called 3-5, then it follows that there's a 3-1, a 3-2, a 3-3, and a 3-4. And in 3-5...
You're far down the tree.
Yeah. In 3-5, I saw two youngsters who had leadership potential. I developed a strategy by which I got one of those youngsters who had a working class background, quite frankly, to come to the front of the class where they sat in the back and preach up and assert himself. Do you know that he raised the standard of that class by setting up an example? And the next year, 3-5 moved up to 4-1.
So let me ask you this, right? From what you've said, observation again from school days, I suppose, and looking at teachers and various ways they've reacted. What is it in a class of, I don't know, 20, 30 people that makes you or certain types of teachers zero in on someone and say, look, I know this person in the back there is supposed to be a troublemaker, or I know that person in the corner there is supposed to be a slow learner, or that person over there, let me make him a prefect, or let me do this, or let me do that. And there's a transformation that is just phenomenal. Whereas other people would say, he a troublemaker, put him out of the class. This person always talking, you know, write a letter and send them home and put them in detention. What makes you and persons who think the way you do not react in that manner to those students?
I would be very slow to put children out of the class. What I did, I calculated that some of these children may have had self-esteem problems.
Okay. But that's from observation again, right?
Yeah.
From looking at them at break time and looking at them at other times, or just in the classroom?
Yeah. You know, interestingly, Dennis, I'll be honest with you, the troublemakers in my time were more female than male, especially when they reached third and fourth form.
Awareness of self?
Pardon me?
Awareness of self?
Yeah. Definitely self-awareness. In fact, some girls will go home before the long vacation start and come back after long vacation as women.
I won't be surprised.
Yeah. But as for the fella in the back and the fella in the corner, very often those students wanted somebody that cared. I remember I had a very bad experience when a girl came to me and told me she was contemplating suicide. Yeah, so what was the problem? She told me that a female teacher looked at her and shouted and said, "You do not belong to my social class and you never will." Okay. Now, there was more to it than that. That girl was trained in a science class in circumstances where she preferred to do commercial work. So she had two problems. She had problems of being in a science class, and she had problems of a shattered ego or shattered id or shattered self-esteem after the female teacher told her that she could ascend to certain social classes. But this thing called teaching is highly complex. Education is very, very complex and becoming more complex. I don't know if you would agree with that. It's becoming more complex. I'm not going to venture into the debacle with CXC and things like that at this stage. But when Wilfred Beckles and Irene Walker were in charge of CXC, although there were certain costs involved in the marking exercise, everything went very well. Even Glenn White Cumberbatch did a very good job. I don't know anything about the current leader, but I think everything with the marking has gone more or less electronic. Yeah. Everything has gone electronic. I don't know how an essay of 2 pages can be marked electronically. I don't know.
Sir, I am just happy that I'm not at school at this time. I'm also happy that I don't have children at that level at this time, because one of the things from my years in school with teachers who would assess your work, they would assess your work during the course of the term. They would look at your report. They would look at what you've done in your exam, and perhaps like you, if they had an interest in the student or an interest in all their students, and thankfully, I think most of the teachers I encountered did, they would call the student aside. Sometimes they would call their parent in with them if they thought that was necessary and say, look, during the course of the term, this has been your grade. This is your exam grade. This really reflects the student I think you are. Tell me what happened here, you know? And they may find out that you get anxious at exam time. They may find out that, quote unquote, you had a bad day. One of the things about distance judging is that you're sitting and you're looking at a paper. You have no connection with the paper. As you say, if it's electronic, it's, you know, it's just there. So you may pick up things and you may grade it a certain way, having no knowledge of the student or their, what you consider to their ability. And to me, it may arise at a, some people may think it's fair to do it that way, but I think there are things that would be overlooked because of the cut and dried nature of, I give somebody an A because this particular paper deserves an A, whether they plagiarized it, whether they copied, it's not known, so they're just given an A on the top of the class. It's unfortunately where we are, and I agree with you, it is complex. I don't know how distance learning now, going online, is going to help it or make it worse. But my feeling is, and this is just gut talking here, that the ramifications of what's happening now will come to fruition 20 years from now. And some of it may be good, and some of it may be very rotten. I thank you for your contribution, sir. We should have some more of that. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Hi, morning.
Dennis, how are you doing, man?
I'm trying to be good. Yeah.
It seems that you're starting a moderating program now discussing cricket.
No, just two people mentioning
always claiming
it.
That you're not a good cricketer, but you speak quite well on the game.
I come from a family of sports people who are disappointed with the fact that I didn't follow in their footsteps.
Obviously, you diverted into another area. And you
well, I know cricket commentary is part of cricket, isn't it? If I wanted to comment it, why ostracize me? Somebody then, got up with the game.
I listened to the Statsman this morning, and it was very good to hear that the Statsman's going to have gone into a different area discussing cricket. I mean,
with a political slant.
Yeah, and it's good to hear him. But his analogy of it, I understand the concept that he was speaking of, when he tried to do a critique of Jason's performance as captain of the West Indies. And I don't want to be too divine in my sentiments this morning, because if you look at the games that Jason would have capped in the West Indies team, compared to when Richards resigned from Test cricket, retired from Test cricket, we had 9 captains basically after Sir Vivian Richards.
One after the other. Yeah.
Richie Richardson, Brian Lara, Jimmy Adams, Courtney Walls, they brought back Carol Hooper, Chris Gayle, Sean DePaul, Darren Sammy. And I think this all started as far back as 2 years ago with the Cricket World Cup, when we had won the Sir Frank World Trophy against England in the Caribbean for the first time. I think it was 35 years or something. No, not 35 years, about 17 years. Right. And Richard Pipus was the coach of the team. for some strange reason, there was a noted historian came just about 3 or 4 weeks before we head off to the World Cup when they were preparing, and he made a very fine statement where we're going back to the mother country and it would be good to have a black person as the coach and whatnot. Jason came publicly and said that the whole team was in support of Pipers, who was a South African. He was picked to do the job. He did an excellent job. But when you listen to Jason Holder, and Dennis, you can't be working for Starcom as the top personality, moderator, news editor at Starcom, and then you go in the interview, cross the road and say that you're looking at down the road for your future, or you're looking at another radio station. Holden, in coming out of New Zealand, said openly that he was looking more to the 2020 version. He was tired living in the bubble. He had missed his family. He had missed Christmas. And this was the Wednesday. By the Friday, Jason Holder was in Australia playing with the Big Bash. So obviously, the West Indies Cricket Board takes lashes, and they deserve to take lashes sometimes. But on this particular occasion, the board had to look for someone who would take the team to Bangladesh. Clearly, Mr. Holder had the opportunity to take the team to Bangladesh, and it wouldn't be this discussion here this morning. He opted out of the Bangladesh tour to go and look after his future. Now, I'm saying the West Indies Cricket Board had to go down the road looking at the future. If you look at the performances of the players and the team now, if you do a proper analysis of our performance against Bangladesh and Sri Lanka, we perform in this 50-over competition, one-day competition, because we had access of selecting from our best pool of players. For the last 6 years, the West Indies selectors had to be pulling out their hair because they could have never selected from the best players. Why? These players were going off to the bigger purses, to the IPLs, the CPLs, the Big Bash, all over the world.
Yeah.
And you have to be fair to the West Indies Cricket Board. At the end of the day, Craig Baffett, who had lost his central contract, obviously is not a marketable cricketer for that 2020 version. Craig Baffett weighed his pros and cons, and he stuck his hand up in the air for captain. Craig Baffett would have looked down the road and recognized that his place was up for grabs.